Steven. Radio. Episode 4 of Stephen LeBron Radio. I'm your host, Alex. For new and returning listeners, remember that the easiest way to keep up with this podcast is to subscribe on iTunes by searching for Stephen LeBron Radio in the iTunes store, or by going to my blog, stephenlebron.com, and clicking on the subscribe to podcast link on the sidebar. And as always, questions, comments, and feedback is welcome. You can find me on Twitter at Stephen_LeBron. And after recording 3 episodes, I'm starting to realize that when I ask my guest questions, I say the words sort of and maybe a lot. So I'm very self-conscious of this, and I'm going to start working on it. Sort of, maybe. So today we're recording the Portland episode of the podcast. Now, Portland has always been a sports town that I've been interested to find out more about, if only because the only things I know about Portland are the Trailblazers and the show Portlandia. So to help to get to know Portland better for myself and the listeners, I've asked basketball writer Sean Hyken, Twitter handle at SHykenNBA, to join me so I can bombard him with questions. Sean, before we get started, tell the listeners a little bit about when you started writing, where, and what you're doing now.
Sure. Well, I would say right now I'm mainly involved with a few sites on the ESPN True Hoop Network, which is a network of NBA blogs for various teams and general NBA blogs I write for. My main site that I write for is Hardwood Paroxysm, which is a site that's run by Matt Moore, who's a CBS NBA blogger. And I have, you know, there's 10 or 15 players on this site. They all do phenomenal work. And it's sort of a general NBA blog that sort of focuses on a lot of some of the more esoteric and half types of NBA analysis. So I do a lot of work there. I do a lot of work for Portland Roundball Society, which is the Portland Trailblazers blog on the True Hoop Network. And I've also this season started writing for MagicBasketball.net, which is the Orlando Magic blog on the True Hoop Network, which has been kind of interesting to follow just because this is a team that just lost Dwight Howard under a pretty ugly circumstance, and now they're sort of rebuilding. So that's been kind of interesting to follow. Now, as far as my history goes, I used to be really into writing music reviews. Like, I used to do a lot of that in high school. I wrote a lot of record reviews for my high school newspaper. I was an editor on my high school newspaper my senior year. And, you know, a lot of office politics and just sort of general stuff like that kind of ruined that experience for me later on, but I won't really go into any of that. But basically, once I got to college, I never really got involved with, like, my college newspaper or anything, but I had some friends that I had who were also really into music that we started a new website called 130 BPM, which is now called Beats Per Minute, actually. It's beatsperminute.com. You can go check it out. I'm not really involved with them anymore, but just because I decided – I was kind of done with writing about music at a certain point, and I decided to move on. But they still do great work over there, and that site is still very much worth checking out. But I started that. And it was sort of – at first, it was just sort of like a little WordPress site that we updated, but now it's actually – I'm pretty sure it's fairly reputable and, you know, has good relationships with record company PR people and concert promoters. And I think it's pretty, you know, pretty legit at this point and pretty well established. So I did that for a while. And then when I got to college, I had cable for the first time in my life. And the Blazers, like the last few years that I was living at home when I was in high school, was the Blazers had this contract with Comcast that they still have, unfortunately, that's basically really exclusive. And so not a lot of games are shown on network TV. So my last few years in Portland, I didn't really get to watch that many Blazer games because I didn't have cable. So when I got to college, I had cable for the first time in my dorm room. So I started watching more basketball and watching more Blazer games. And so I sort of started getting more into it then. And at the same time, that's when Twitter first started becoming a big deal. And so I got on Twitter and I started following a lot of NBA bloggers and NBA players and other NBA fans. And that was sort of my way of following the NBA, besides just watching the games, was sort of, you know, getting involved in, like, the amazing NBA Twitter community where guys will just, like, throw out jokes about players or just random stats during games. And that was fun. And then, you know, at a certain point, I was just like, you know what, I think I'm an okay writer and I have a lot of opinions about this stuff, so I might as well try it out. I started off writing at Bleacher Report back sort of before I knew anything about what sort of reputation that site has in the general online sports blogosphere. And, you know, people, I was pretty happy with the articles that I wrote there, but I was sort of frustrated by the fact that these articles that I wrote that I thought were pretty good would get like one third or one fifth of the page views of a slideshow that one of the editors asked me to put together that was something really stupid that I just threw together in 10 minutes. It just kind of annoyed me that got like way more traffic than something that I actually spent time on and that I actually wanted people to read because I thought it was good. So I just decided I basically would be better off starting my own blog. And so I just started a really, you know, crappy NBA blog that didn't really get any traffic. But it was just kind of good for me to do, just like, to have something on my resume to apply in places that was a little bit less of a joke than Bleacher Report. And so we're talking like summer of 2010 here, like right around the time of the decision and LeBron going to Miami and all that stuff. And so that summer, there's a Blazers blog called Rip City Project. It's sort of the second most renowned Blazers blog after, of course, Blazers Edge. And it used to be run by these two guys, and one of them, Cooper Moorhead, is now a web writer for the Miami Heat on their official website. And so he got that job, and then the other guy who ran it, SJ, decided he was going to step away because he and Coop had sort of built it together, and he didn't really want to do it with a new person, but he wanted to keep it alive. And so he put up a post on the site saying, hey, we're looking for new writers. And so I applied, and, you know, they picked me. And so they picked me, and they picked this guy, Mike Acker, who still writes for the site, and he does great work there still. And so I did that for that season, and that was fun. Like, I enjoyed doing that. And then over the summer during the NBA lockout, I was, you know, long story short, I was sort of in the right place at the right time that Matt Moore asked me to write for Hardwood Paroxysm. And so I started doing that, and then I started getting more involved with the ESPN True Hoop Network and, you know, getting introduced to, you know, guys like Kevin Arnovitz and Henry Abbott. And then, I started contributing to Portland Roundball Society, which is the Blazers blog on that site, on the True Hoop Network. And, you know, here I am now. I guess I write for a whole bunch of different places.
Now, Sean, since you write a lot about the Portland Trail Blazers and you follow them closely, and the fact that you were born and raised in Portland, I want to ask you, what's your favorite sports memory of the Blazers team?
I would say probably my first time going to a Blazers playoff game, which was against Utah in 1999. I would have been about 9 or 10 years old at the time. And they won the game, and we had really good seats because my dad used to know the Blazers team doctor at the time. And so, first of all, it was really awesome for me because whenever we used to go to games before that, we'd always just sort of sit in the cheap seats because my dad didn't want to pay a lot of money for tickets. But we got these really good seats, this playoff game. And then afterwards, we went down to sort of the tunnel by where the players entered the locker room, and we stuck our hands out, and Brian Grant high-fived me. So that would say that was probably my best memory as a Blazers fan.
And of course, I'm going to ask, you probably have maybe a long list to choose from, sort of your worst memory.
Well, I would say it's pretty hard to top watching Game 7 of the 2000 Western Conference Finals on TV when the Blazers had a double-digit lead going into the fourth quarter against the Lakers, and then they missed 13 or 14 shots in a row or something like that, and the Lakers came back and won. If the Blazers had won that game, they would have gone to the finals, and I have to think they probably would have beaten the Pacers that year.
Yeah, so, I think you would be right.
Seeing them just sort of choke away the title. I hate using the word choke because it's so, you know, overused and misused a lot of the time, but just seeing them sort of have it right there and then blow it that's the closest that they've gotten to winning a championship in my lifetime. They haven't won a playoff series since that year. And, you know, and I guess you could throw in anything from the Jailblazer years or a lot of things from last season or any of the games I watched where Greg Oden had a season-ending injury or anything like that. You know, there are a lot of things you could throw in there, but I would say probably Game 7 of the 2000 Western Finals, it takes the cake.
Yeah, so I'm curious. One of the reasons I had you on is because I'm not really sort of too familiar with how Portland is as a sports town. For me, from the outside, I'm from Toronto. I just have this image from sort of reading online, following some of the Portland people on Twitter. For some reason, I feel like I follow, out of all the basketball towns, I follow the most people from Portland. There's just a huge community of people on Twitter. Tell me, sort of my view is that it's kind of a small, tight-knit, knowledgeable sports community. Is this true? Kind of give me a description, since you're more familiar of how Portland is as a sports town.
Well, Blazer fans are very knowledgeable about the team. That's extremely true. You can go into like the comments section on Blazer's Edge, and people will always be throwing out, you know, memories from teams from the 80s and the 90s and stuff like that. You know, everybody really gets into the Blazers when they're doing well. And even when they're not doing well, but it's not just like the Jailblazers where it just becomes impossible to, you know, support these guys because of, you know, who they are. But, you know, in general, yes, I would say that Portland is a very supportive town of the Blazers, and they're very knowledgeable and very passionate, and games are sold out all the time when the Blazers are playing well. They haven't been very, very well attended this year, but I think that's probably because going in, everybody knew that they weren't going to be very good. So I guess they just lost some attendance there, but like I would still say overall the Blazers fans are among the best in the league for sure. I say it's a sold out Rose Garden when it's on is as good as any atmosphere in professional sports, in my opinion. I mean, it's obviously not going to compare to something like a European soccer stadium, but in terms of American sports, it's pretty hard to beat.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned the Jailblazers twice, so I want to ask you a quick question about sort of that era. Obviously, kind of a black mark on the franchise, and sort of I want to know, tell me a little bit about how sort of the whole city kind of reacted to the team. Did the whole city, did the fan base sort of really turn against sort of management and all the players, and how hard was it to sort of get it back if that was the case?
Well, it was sort of a gradual process because the Blazers always had guys in like the late 90s and early 2000s. They always had guys who maybe got in trouble. Like Isaiah Ryder at one point was busted for trying to smoke weed out of a Coke can, which I'm just like, if you're a millionaire NBA player, you can afford like a regular pipe, I feel like. First of all, so they trade him, and then they have this incredible team in 99 to 2000, which is the year that they lost to the Lakers in the Western Finals, and that was, you know, that was the year they had like Damon Stoudemire, Scottie Pippen, Brian Grant, Sheed, Arvydas Sabonis, Stacey Augmon, all these guys. And then, you know, that offseason they had this general manager that was hired by Paul Allen as one of his people from Seattle, because Paul Allen owns the Seahawks too, so he's like a former Seahawks executive named Bob Whitsitt, who basically came in the mid 90s and started basically trading for stars and trading for big names regardless of whether they had good chemistry. Like, he traded after that 2000 season when they lost to the Lakers in the Western Finals, he traded Brian Grant, who was, you know, a big fan favorite, and he was a great guy in the community and all that. They traded him for Sean Kemp, who by that point was kind of, you know, washed up and overweight and had some drug issues and all this kind of stuff. But they traded for Sean Kemp, and you think, oh, the outsider is going to think, oh, this is awesome. We got Sean Kemp. If you just remember him from the 90s when he was with the Sonics. And you know, they do this, all this other stuff. Like, they get, you know, they had Scottie Pippen a little bit later in his prime. They got Sean Kemp at that point. They re-signed Rod Strickland, who had played with the Blazers for a number of years in the 90s. They re-signed him when he kind of has some issues with drunk driving and stuff, and then they get that, and then you combine that, you also have Damon Stoudemire, who was busted for marijuana a few times, and then you have Rasheed Wallace, who's, you know, always kind of an interesting character, and then, you know, that's sort of a gradual process. But at first it was like, you know, okay, you know, they have a few guys who are kind of questionable characters, but that's okay. But then, you know, they start drafting, they signed Reuben Patterson, who was sort of a suspected sex offender. They signed him to be the Kobe stopper. After Seattle let him go, they gave him a big contract. They have Bonzi Wells, who made this comment to Sports Illustrated. There was an article, I think this was like December of 2001, that Sports Illustrated ran this article about how much the Blazers had fallen off from being title contenders, and Bonzi Wells had this quote in that article where he said, "Oh, we don't really care about what the fans think of us, because we know that they're going to ask us for autographs on the street if they see us anyway, so we don't really worry about what they think." And that didn't really sit well with a lot of people. But then they start drafting guys like Zach Randolph and Quintel Woods, and they give Darius Miles a big contract, and you know, it just, at a certain point, like, all this stuff adds up, and it just is really ugly, and...
That's a long list. That's a long list of names that you've rattled off.
Like, all those guys were on the Blazers at one point, and a lot of them were on the team at the same time, and it was just a really bad situation. And then, like, you combine that with, like, once the team is not winning, because the last time they made the playoffs until, like, 2009 was 2003, and after that, they were not only one of the worst teams in the league on the court, but they always... I think there was one season, I think this was like 03, or it was like 04, 05, where like I think the longest streak of a player not getting in trouble in some way, either with the league or getting arrested, was like 17 days.
That's incredible.
Their season. So it's like, you combine the fact they aren't playing well, and it's pretty easy to see why the city sort of turned on them at that point. And I have a funny story about that, actually. In about 2005. My parents went to a Paul McCartney concert at the Rose Garden, and they told me this, and I've heard this from other people who went to that show too. They said that Paul McCartney was like, when he was doing sort of his onstage band, he was like, "Yeah, Portland, home of the Trailblazers." Like, just, you know, just trying, like, as an outsider, just, cool. I'm going to give him a shout out to the local team. They'll like that. And everybody started booing him.
He was going for like a cheap pop, like how the wrestlers do. That's funny.
And they booed the Blazers. So yeah, that's how bad it got at a certain point. And then I would say when they got out of it was when I think it was like 03 or 04 that Bob Whitsitt resigned, and they started talking about changing the culture, but that didn't even really happen for a few years. They had this coach, Maurice Cheeks, who I think kind of got a bad rap at the time for how he handled it, but I think he was just sort of doing whatever he could with the talent that they gave him. But then around 05, they hired Nate McMillan, and he really started, you know, cracking down on off behavior and being much more of a disciplinarian, and I think that's sort of what the team needed at the time. And then they brought in the GM, Kevin Pritchard, who started targeting more high-character guys than you know, necessarily just guys with on-court talent. And then, you know, gradually they draft Brandon Roy, they draft LaMarcus Aldridge, so now they have a couple of young, promising players, and then they get the number one pick in 07, and they draft Greg Oden, and, you know, we'll go into that later, the whole Greg Oden-Sam Bowie connection. But they draft Greg Oden, and then on the same day as they draft Greg Oden, they traded Zach Randolph, and mm-hmm. that's the last of the main Jailblazers to go. And then at that point, they still had the next season. They still didn't make the playoffs, but they went 41-41 for the first time in a number of years. They actually had a .500 record, and most of the guys on the team were, like, good character guys. And then, you know, slowly after that, like, Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge started blossoming into great players. They started making the playoffs again, and I think that's sort of where they got back to where they were at before the Jailblazer era started.
Yeah, well, let's go back to, since we're on this timeline now, let's go back to Greg Oden. I know it's kind of a bit of a revisionist history to say now that Durant would have been the correct pick, but your opinion at the time before the draft, when all the debates were going on between whether to take Oden or Durant, which side were you on at the time?
Oh. And I think everybody was. And I actually had a really good friend at the time who said they should have taken Durant, who said, no, I think they should take Durant because I don't think Oden is going to be able to stay healthy. And he also basically just saw what Durant was doing at Texas and just knew that he was going to be, you know, a superstar. But, you know, there were legitimate concerns about whether, you know, Durant was skinny or too much of just a shooter, and there were those concerns at the time. Like, it's easy to sort of forget that now because, you know, obviously he's arguably the second best player in the NBA after LeBron James, but and especially just because, like, at the time, now, like, right now, it would be a lot easier to compete in the NBA if you don't have a traditional center, but back then it's still like the, you know, the great big man, because people always, like, think about, like, oh, the Spurs had David Robinson, the Rockets had Hakeem Olajuwon, the Knicks had Patrick Ewing in the 90s, and so then there basically were so few dominant big men in the league. Like, Shaq was still playing well at that point in Miami, and then Houston had Yao Ming, and Orlando had Dwight Howard, but there were so few great centers that whenever the opportunity to draft somebody who has that kind of talent, even if there are health issues there, the opportunity to draft somebody who has the potential to be on that level, which Greg Oden absolutely did, is sort of a gamble that you take. And when you combine that with the fact that not a lot of people know this, but San Antonio, and this was the season right after they won their last championship, this was 07, San Antonio, I've heard reported multiple places, and I've heard this from multiple people, but San Antonio called Portland up and offered them Tim Duncan for that pick so that they could draft Greg Oden.
Wow.
So it was pretty clear at the time that he was the consensus pick, and that's kind of why I don't have a lot of patience for people saying right now that, oh, they should have drafted Kevin Durant. And, like, there were certainly people who thought that at the time. They were a minority, but they were there, and, you know, those people ended up being right, but it was certainly not such an obvious thing at the time. In fact, it was the other way, that everybody basically said that Oden was the right pick.
Right. Now, after, with Greg Oden, the other big story from Portland in recent years is obviously Brandon Roy, who retired last year, came back on the Timberwolves. Before he retired from Portland, he had that inspired playoff performance against the Mavericks. Of course, he's injured again now, and it looks like that he's going to have to retire soon, or else he's going to do a lot more permanent damage to himself. What do you think about Roy's decision to come back, and just what were your general impressions of him? Because I'm sure you followed him closely.
I thought it was a bad idea at the time when he announced his comeback, because, I mean, the fact that he does not have meniscus, and he doesn't have in either one of his knees. Like, his knees are both just bone on bone. And, like, before this season, they were talking about how he had the Kobe knee surgery, that thing that he flew to Germany for, that supposedly re-energized his career. But it's like, that can only do so much for somebody whose knees are as bad as Roy's. So I am sadly really hoping I would be proven wrong, because I would really like to see him come back and be able to play well. But first of all, I wasn't surprised at all when he got hurt, just because, you know, when it said, oh, Brandon Roy is out with knee soreness and now he's going to have arthroscopic surgery, I was just like, yeah, I mean, that is pretty easy to see coming. But also, I watched a couple of Timberwolves games early on in the season when he was playing for them, just because I was really curious to see how he did, and he just did not look good at all. He looked really lost on the offense. He was not shooting well. He was complete liability on defense, and it was just not that surprising because his knees were in such bad shape. And I think even that game against Dallas, as much as that sort of cemented his legacy as one of the most beloved players in Portland history, I think just that game and how hard he went in that game with his knees being in the condition that they were and limited minutes he had been playing for the rest of that season, I think that might have been the thing that put him over and made him have to retire in the first place and done some permanent damage anyway. So I would be shocked if he played at all next season, or even if he played again.
Yeah. Now, so many sort of, you know, things that went wrong, bad luck, injuries with the franchise. How is it like to be sort of cheering for this team? Obviously, there's been highs, like you mentioned, a couple of trips in the late 90s or early 2000s to the conference finals. How is it like to be cheering for a team that seems to just constantly sort of disappoint and in such sort of dramatic ways?
Well, I mean, you just sort of have to. And this is something I've learned over the years, and mostly since I've gotten into blogging and gotten into being on Twitter, you sort of have to learn how to appreciate things about the team other than simply the wins and losses, or necessarily just how they play. But, you want to look at it like this season, for example. I sort of knew going into this year that they weren't going to win that many games, just because there's not a lot of talent there outside of Damian Lillard and Nicholas Batum and LaMarcus Aldridge. There's just not a lot of depth there. So I sort of knew they weren't going to do well this season. So I just am watching every game as, you know, something to build on for the future. Like, if Damian Lillard has a good game or improves something about his game that had been flawed previously, I'm thinking, okay, that's great. That's something that will come in handy when the team is good, when they have more talent on the roster, or if some of their other young players have breakout games. Like, this year is totally just a developmental year and a rebuilding year, and basically wins and losses are sort of irrelevant.
Now, aside from the Blazers, I know that there are a couple of other sports teams of interest in Portland, and one of the things that you had mentioned to me off-air was about the college football rivalry between the Oregon Ducks and the Oregon State Beavers. Maybe tell me a little bit about that.
Right, well, there's not really a viable major college team in Portland. There's the Portland State Vikings, but they're not really that high level. They don't really play against anybody major, or they're never really a threat. So basically everybody in Portland who's from around here, you take a side, you're either with the Ducks, the University of Oregon Ducks, or with the Oregon State Beavers. And so that's sort of the main rivalry. And I was always a Ducks fan growing up for whatever reason. And but also Joey Harrington's cousins live down the street from us. And Joey Harrington actually now lives a few blocks from my parents' house too. But so my neighbors were always Oregon Ducks fans, and all my friends growing up were always Oregon Ducks fans. And then obviously when I went to University of Oregon, I was too. But that's definitely a big thing here. A couple weeks ago, they had the Civil War game, which they have every year at the end of the season, and that was a big deal too. And that's always a big deal every year. But honestly, having lived in Eugene for 5 years now, I'm kind of over the whole college sports thing in general. Like, I just, being around like really hardcore college football fans in general, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of at this point, but I still watch the Ducks and follow them.
Yeah, when you do you follow a lot of college basketball?
No. And I really have a character flaw of myself. It's not as good as the NBA. It's just not. Like, a lot of people will tell me, oh, it's the fundamentals are better and it's more pure. And I'm just like, no, it's not. The NCAA is more corrupt than any professional sports league, even one run by David Stern. And, you know, the basketball itself is unwatchable. Like, I would so much, like, you're saying, oh, I'd rather watch these, you know, these college players who don't know how to make free throws or don't know how to, you know, box out for rebounds than watch, you know, LeBron James and Kevin Durant and Dwight Howard. Like, no.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. I've never really followed college basketball that closely. One of the main reasons, like you said, is the quality of play. I do tune in for the March Madness, but I find now, in recent years now, especially with the guys jumping after 1 year, the quality of play, even during the tournaments, some of the games are just, you can't watch them.
I know. I remember there was this one, I think it was like UConn versus Butler. It was like two or three years ago, which was the NCAA championship game, and it was like one of the most unwatchable games I've ever seen.
Yeah, and that's hard to do, because you figure sort of in any sports, a championship game would be worth watching. But college basketball, I remember that game. That game actually made a championship game hard to watch, which is a tough thing to do.
These days, the last couple of years, I've tried to watch a few games here and there as, like, the last couple of seasons since I started getting into blogging, just because I know that, like, a big part of covering the NBA is covering the draft. And so I want to know who a lot of these guys are. Like, I don't want to go in to the draft, like, not knowing who Anthony Davis is, not knowing who Bradley Beal is, not knowing who Deion Waiters is or any of these guys, or Harrison Barnes. I will admit I did not watch the second of Damian Lillard before Portland drafted him, because, I mean, his school was never on TV or publicized. So most of the college basketball that I do get to watch is, you know, the teams like Duke and Kentucky and North Carolina that are on TV a lot. But I try to at least stay up on, like, who the players are that are going to be draft prospects for the next year. So I'm at least into it in that sense somewhat.
Mm-hmm. Something I forgot to bring up at the top was I've been following you on Twitter, and one of the main hashtags that you've been using is hashtag whack fantasy. So you're actually in this sort of reverse fantasy league, is that right?
I am in a whack fantasy basketball league. Let me actually pull up the scoring rules real quick so I can give you a more accurate rundown. I mean, basically, a friend of mine who's Philip Barnett, who you guys can follow on Twitter at I'm So Hideous with two S's at the end. He's a Lakers blogger for Forum Blue and Gold. He's a really good writer and a really good Twitter follow. So I'm just going to plug him right there. But he started this league where basically the point of it is to draft players who are terrible and who play a lot of minutes. So basically, you get points for games played. You get a quarter of a point for minutes. You get set 0.75 points for field goals attempted, free throws attempted, three-point shots attempted, -2 for points scored, -1 for rebound, -0.5 for assists, steals, and blocked shots. You get 3 points for turnovers, 3 points for personal fouls, 5 points for technical fouls, 5 points for ejections, 5 points. So basically the point of it, like, the fact that you get points for games played and minutes played is you have to, the skill of it is trying to find players that play minutes and are terrible.
Right. And tell me, who are the whack fantasy MVPs in the first couple of weeks of the season, first month of the season?
Well, AJ Rice was my guy. Like, he's killing him on the Wizards, except now he just got injured. I think he had some kind of knee thing today, so he's going to be out like 6 weeks, so that's going to kind of hurt me. But basically, here's my roster. I just picked up Marcus Thornton today to replace him. And anytime you're saying, you know, you're dropping eight to pick up Marcus Thornton in your fantasy league, like, you know, so here's my roster at this point. I've got Ronnie Price, the Blazers' backup point guard. Basically, I tried to draft as many Blazers bench players as possible just because that's usually pays off. So I've got Ronnie Price, Shannon Brown, Marcus Thornton now, Chris Singleton, Jeff, Udonis Haslam, Myers Leonard, Jared Jeffries, Nolan Smith, who I just picked up recently to handcuff Ronnie Price because he hasn't been playing much lately.
This guy's telling me about whack fantasy handcuffs. I love this. Go on.
Derek, who I just picked up like when Dallas signed him. I unfortunately had to drop Troy Murphy, who was a huge producer of points for me in this league. I dropped Troy Murphy and picked up Derek Fisher. And then I have Anthony Randolph, Hasheem Thabeet, and Jermaine O'Neal.
Yeah, Jermaine O'Neal is not that good for that league, is he?
Scored 20 points today.
Yeah. So you might need to send him to waivers.
No, 20 points.
Oh, 20 points under 20 your points. System.
Whack fantasy. Yeah, he's a... I would say that Jared Jeffries and Ronnie Price have probably been my two most valuable players. Oklahoma City, since they're just like weird ninjas with their player development, they've somehow turned Hasheem Thabeet into a valuable rotation player. But I'm winning my current matchup that ends tomorrow 122-47, and I'm 4-0 in the league. So I should be it looks like there's one other undefeated team in the league, but I'd say I'm doing pretty well for myself right now with this.
And what do you think? You think this? What do you think this says about you as a basketball fan?
Here's the thing, like, I'm in four or five other fantasy leagues that are just normal fantasy leagues, and I'm doing, like, I'm, like, 500 in my record or lower in all of them, so I'm basically, like, middle of the pack in all my regular fantasy leagues, so I'm basically, I guess it just shows that I'm better at being able to tell when a player isn't good than when a player is good, so I don't know what that says about me, but I would say that this is definitely the most fun fantasy league that I've been in this year.
Well, I think being able to do good at WAC Fantasy and identifying these players who actually play but don't put up great numbers is definitely a skill. So I give you credit for your undefeated record for sure. Now, I want to talk about Portland, get back to some of the other sports that's there. Now, Portland has an MLS soccer team. I love their name. It's the Timbers. Talk a little bit more about them.
Yeah, the Timbers are huge here. And the Timbers have been in Portland for a number of years, but they just got promoted from whatever minor soccer league they were in to the MLS a couple of years ago. I think this is maybe their third or fourth season, maybe their third in Portland. I mean, their third as an MLS team, and Seattle got a team the same year, and Vancouver did. So they basically, I guess the Pacific Northwest has sort of become a hotbed for American professional soccer because there really aren't that many teams in those cities now. Like, there are the Mariners and the Seahawks in Seattle, but they lost the Sonics, so now there's kind of a void there. And Portland obviously only has one professional team, and so does Vancouver with the Canucks. So all three of those cities have basically become really big soccer cities, and I would say Portland kind of was a natural fit for there to be a soccer team that does well, just because you know all the stereotypes about Portland and people who live in Portland and hipsters, and soccer is something that's, you know, very European and not very much accepted by most American sports fans, and so that seems like the kind of thing that Portland would gravitate towards. So I'm not really at all surprised that it's doing well, and I'm glad that it is, because I think it's great that we have another professional sports team that people are excited about when things are maybe not going so well for the Blazers. I've personally never been a huge soccer fan myself, so I've never really gotten into it, but I think it's definitely great for the city and great for the culture that there are that the Timbers are doing well here.
And is the soccer stadium close to where the Rose Garden is?
No, it's actually on the other side of it. It's downtown, where it's where we used to have a minor league baseball team that we used to have. I think first we had a single A affiliate of the Colorado Rockies, and then we had a triple A affiliate of the San Diego Padres. and then they moved out of town. And so they had a stadium that they basically just renovated into a soccer-only stadium. So that's where they play now. It used to be called PGE Park for Portland General Electric, and now it's called Jeldwen, which I'm honestly not sure what Jeldwen is, but I know it's a company based in Portland.
and do the crowds – so the team actually does well in terms of fan base, selling tickets and all that stuff?
See, I have no idea whether they're actually a good soccer team because I don't really follow it, but I know that it's like impossible to get tickets. And one of my roommates last year in college is from the Netherlands, and so he has gone to a lot of soccer games in Europe over the course of his life. And he went to a Timbers game one time, and he said that it was legitimately comparable to European atmospheres.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Did not know that at all. Because here in Toronto, we have an MLS team too, but I think we've never made the playoffs. And we used to sell out, I think, the first couple of years that the team was here. But now that novelty's worn off, and they play in front of half-empty stadiums.
So, I mean, what would you say the most popular team in Toronto is? Is it the Blue Jays or is it the Maple Leafs? Because I can't imagine the Raptors do too well.
Well, you know what's funny? The Leafs is a completely different beast from every other team here, just because hockey is just huge here in Toronto.
Yeah.
But you'll find just the fan bases don't sort of intersect with each other. So you'll have hockey fans, and then you'll have basketball fans. It's very rare to find or talk to someone who actually is really into both sports.
Yeah.
And the Raptors fan base, I mean, I'm sure you know from online, the online fan base is really rabid. Like, there's a huge following there. And, you know, the crowds haven't been as good these last couple of years, but there's a huge following here. I like to think that Toronto, though, is a really sort of bandwagon city, where if the team is doing well, they'll come out. I think just because the nature of it is that it's such a big city here in Canada that they don't feel the need. There's not a big enough fan base that feels the need to sort of pay attention to all the sports.
Right, and it's not like it's also, I get the impression that the media in Toronto isn't as much, you know, all over the teams that the way that a city like Boston or New York or LA would be.
Yeah, only the Toronto Maple Leafs get that kind of coverage.
Just because of how important hockey is for the culture of Canada in general?
Yeah, I'll give you a good example, because on Thursday, the TNT game, it was Knicks Heat, right? Yeah, that was the Thursday game. And because there was an NHL lockout press conference that basically said nothing, our local sports network preempted the game. So we were watching the press conference until the second quarter of the game.
So, that's, first of all, I don't know if you're a hockey fan, but if you are, I extend my deepest sympathy.
I'm not. I hate hockey, but go on.
Hockey fan either, but I just haven't gone through, like, I try not to read too many articles about the NHL lockout, just because some of the terms, whatever they're talking about working out the revenue split versus the system issues, and whether they're talking about decertification for the
players. That's not why we follow sports, you know?
Give me so many flashbacks to last summer when the same thing was going on in the NBA, and I just like didn't even know, like, my writing career in that area had finally started to get off the ground a little bit, and then, you know, suddenly there might not be a season. So I understand. I'm not a hockey fan myself, but I know exactly what the hockey fans are going through right now, and I really hope that it gets resolved soon.
Yeah, it doesn't look that good, but yeah, it's interesting you ask, because the fan base is just really different here. You follow baseball, right?
Yeah, not to the extent that I do basketball, but yes, I do.
Yeah, so who's your favorite team since you're in Portland?
So, funny story about that. Like, you would think it would be the Mariners just because, like, they're the most geographically close, but, you know, I've never really felt compelled to root for Seattle teams just because we don't have them in Portland. My dad grew up in Connecticut. And so he was a big Red Sox fan his entire life. And when I was 9, I decided I wanted to annoy him, so I became a Yankees fan.
It's a pretty interesting time to be a Yankees fan right now, if only because we live in this weird world where the Yankees are now some sort of model citizen for fiscal responsibility, although I use those terms loosely because all they're trying to do is get under the luxury tax that teams only like them, and obviously the Dodgers are going to pay now. So you see them sort of not being as aggressive in terms of throwing money out to free agents in the open market this season.
I'm not really, it's not anything that I've ever noticed that they ever did in my lifetime, but I guess they're really trying to get serious. And I think a lot of that is because ever since George Steinbrenner died, and really a couple of years before he died, he sort of handed the control of the team over to his two sons, Hank and Hal, and they were a lot more cost conscious than he was. He was basically willing to just go out and spend money on whatever and whoever the most flashy free agent was. And in a lot of ways, I think it's been good that they've sort of cut back on that, because it means they're going to, you know, sign less contracts. Like in recent years, they signed, you know, Carl Pavano and AJ Burnett and Alfonso Soriano to like all these big contracts that just didn't really turn out well. And then, you know, they gave A-Rod that giant extension that they're going to be paying for another 5 or 6 years. And so I think it's good that they're sort of not letting themselves have any opportunities to do that. But what I'm more worried about is, like, they're going to have to re-sign Robinson Cano next offseason. And, you know, they're going to have to decide what to do with Curtis Granderson. And, like, they're still paying Sabathia and Teixeira all that money. So it's like, they certainly have the resources, because the YES Network is worth, you know, however many billions of dollars it pulls in every year. And so I don't know what they're going to do with it. But it seems like so far, like, the last few years, they've had a lot of success in terms of finding guys like Raul Ibanez or Eric Chavez, who it would seem like are at the end of their careers, that they've been able to sort of pull off the scrap heap and have be productive. And so I guess I'm hoping that they find more guys like that, or I don't know what they're going to do, honestly. I sort of haven't really followed baseball that much the last couple of years, just because since I started doing this NBA blogging thing, I've just been so much more preoccupied with that.
It's interesting that your dad is a Red Sox fan and you're a Yankees fan, and under those circumstances, I do have to ask, in the 2004 ALCS, when the Red Sox came back from the 0-3 deficit and beat the Yankees in 7 and went on to finally break this curse to win the World Series, how did you feel?
It sucked at the time, but honestly, like, his entire life he had never had he lived through, you know, the 78 pennant game and the, you know, the 86 World Series with Bill Buckner, and, you know, he's lived through all this stuff. So, you know, seeing him, like, finally see them win one, like, it sucked for me at the time as a Yankees fan, but, like, since then I've sort of come to appreciate it. The second one I didn't really like as much, the 07 World Series, just because by that time, like, people who I never even knew followed baseball, like, immediately started wearing Red Sox stuff to school after the 04 World Series, and it, like, suddenly became really cool to like them. And then, you know, around that time, like, basically, the Red Sox basically just became, like, the Yankees 2.0, where they basically got people to still think that they were these underdogs and the Yankees were the evil empire, but really they were spending just as much money, and they had just as annoying of bandwagon fans that were just really arrogant about it.
It's funny because the Red Sox stopped being interesting the minute that they won that championship, the first one in 04.
I agree. It's like, I have to say, I was not sad at all to see what happened to them when, like, this last couple of years when they just sort of collapsed and they had all these big contracts they had to basically unload on the Dodgers.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's funny you bring up baseball, because you mentioned a story that I actually had no clue about. You were telling me that when the Montreal Expos, before they actually moved and became the Washington Nationals, there was a time when there were stories that were out there that they were going to move to Portland.
Yeah, they were. And Portland was actually, I'm pretty sure Portland was first on the list. It was basically either going to be Portland, Washington, or San Antonio were the three cities that they had it down to that they were going to move the team to. And I think Portland was what they wanted, but the city didn't want to pay for a stadium. And so they ended up moving to Washington and becoming the Nationals.
Now, talking about the Expos, I can't help but think of their former owner, Jeffrey Loria, who is now the owner of the Miami Marlins, and just a couple of weeks ago sold most of his remaining high-paid good players to us here in Toronto. It's another nasty situation going on there in Miami.
And that kind of makes me, that whole story just kind of makes me happy. Like, as much as I, at the time, I wanted there to be a Major League Baseball team in Portland, I'm kind of glad the city didn't fork over a bunch of money to build a stadium, because you saw what just happened to the Miami fans. Like, they spend all this money to build that new stadium, and then the team spends all this money on all these players, and they're, you know, going to make a big splash. And then, you know, the team sucks, and they trade away all the guys, and now they're just – it just seems like the owner basically just ripped off the entire city to build this billion-dollar stadium, and now the team sucks, and the team doesn't even have any high-paid players. So it really seems like it was just done for nothing, and I realize that wouldn't have happened with Portland if they had gotten the Nationals, just because now the Nationals have, you know, a lot of those guys like Steven Strasburg and Bryce Harper and Jordan Zimmerman are coming up, and it's been really good to see them become a contender. But just the chance that might have happened, and you consider some other cities that have spent money on stadiums for teams and had it come back to bite them, I think it's probably a good thing that didn't happen with Portland, because I think it would have soured everybody on sports as a whole, and then maybe once the Blazers got good again, like, people wouldn't have been as into it, because they would have had a bad taste in their mouth about having just paid for a Major League Baseball stadium.
I'm curious if there's going to be any legal implications to what he's done to the city of Miami, but it looks like it's just another case of sports fans trusting a sports owner and a sports owner letting them down. Now, we've had some great discussion about the city of Portland. To close out, Sean, could you give our listeners a few recommendations on places to check out if they ever visit Portland?
Well, if you go to Portland, you have to go to Voodoo Donuts, which is, you know, it's a pretty famous donut shop. In I believe there are two locations of it in Portland. There's one in Eugene too, but there are two in Portland. And they have sort of your normal type of donuts, but they also have, you know, they have like a bacon maple bar, and they used to have, before it became illegal, they used to have a donut that had cough syrup on it. And they basically have all these, just like these weird types of donuts. And, you know, there's like a lot of vintage movies and like vintage pinball machines in the thing. And they have a jukebox with like all old school hip hop and punk rock. And, you can even get married. Like, they have voodoo weddings there that you can get for like $100. And so it's kind of like sort of your textbook, like, Portlandia type of thing. And then I would say the other place that's like a must see in Portland, there's a lot of food carts downtown that have really good food. It's definitely a very like food cart heavy city, and like a lot of independent food distributors and that kind of thing. So there's definitely a lot of food carts that are good to check out. But I would say the number one place that I would tell anybody to go in Portland is Powell's, which is the world's biggest bookstore. It's like six or seven stories, and it's massive. It's the kind of thing where you can just spend hours in there and not even realize it. And you can always find stuff. You always find books for really good prices, used books, new books, out of print stuff, basically anything. And it's one of my favorite places in Portland. I always like to go there at least once every time I'm home, just, you know, spend a day there and just look through stuff and maybe buy stuff.
Perfect.
So, Powell's and Voodoo Donuts are my two big recommendations for Portland, for outsiders.
Perfect. Sean, I'm really glad we had you on, because now I know Portland isn't just all about the Blazers. There's just so much more to Portland.
Right. Yeah, it is. It's a very culturally rich city, and sports-wise, there's a lot of history and a lot of tradition, mostly with the Blazers, but I think the Timbers are starting to develop that as well. So, yeah, it's definitely a really good atmosphere here as far as that stuff goes.
Perfect. Hey, listen, Sean, thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Okay, good chat. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks. Bye.
See ya.
By the basket, Blazer dancers bumping, thumping. Big shot by Buck Williams pumping. Slapped so hard that ball was flying right in my face, man. I ain't lying. Trapped too dark, but the ball done decked me. Knocked me cold, disconnect me. Next thing I know, I'm in a Blazer jersey. Coach says he's going in for Kersey. I said, you're right, man, check you out. And then he got in my face and began to shout.
Buzz about your water, Dr. Blazer, do these singles. I can slam it, he's a killer, please, and go up, kitty, got it good.
Watch, oh, watch, this is gonna be watch, harder than watch, I thought. Watch, how you spelling that? Yeah, right. Whatever. Back to my story. Bust
bust a bucket, toss a pass, talking to a fan who flunked gym class. But there I was, just the same, playing pro and finding fame. Dip to the well, scoop to the trough, Porter said,
shoot, man, don't pass off.
Half time, bout time, rest my bide, have a little chat with the mad Rashad.
I feel pretty good, man, that's the truth. I'll tell you more later when I stop by the...